Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahana Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadi Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vastari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, 68, second paragraph. The Lord is perfectly transcendental. Did we do this? 40?
I don't think so.
Okay. So then we'll just start. We didn't. Okay, so we'll just start at the beginning. Brahma arranged the necessary ingredients and paraphernalia for offering sacrifice from the Lord's own body. Gradually, by invoking the demigods' names, he attained Vishnu, the ultimate goal. Brahma informs Narada that the same... So invoking the demigods' names, that means the potencies that they're manifesting.
Yes.
That because the demigods aren't actually there yet.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
That means you're dealing with still with the primary creation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
He attained Vishnu. Brahma informs Narada that the same sacrifice was later performed by nine older brothers of Naradaji, who are exalted among demigods and sages. Thereafter, the sacrifice was performed by the Manus, the forefathers, the learned scholars, etc. In return, because these are all the great personalities, right? So you have Brahma's sons, right? Then you have the Manus, then you have the forefathers, the great sages. You know, all this is on the higher planets. So the here I would think it means the forefathers means who's the head of the forefathers, rather than the forefathers themselves. Right? Because the forefathers, you have groups of forefathers, and they will be, you know, all situated within Yamaraja's scene, you know, between there and the moon planet. But then they have who's in charge of them. So I think it will mean those ones, right?
Are they prototypes?
Yeah, they're. I mean, it's like you have the sadhyas who are the heads of each of the kind of species, mm-hmm. You know. And then so these are who's the head of that particular kind of, like the kshatriyas have their forefathers, and so. There is a patriarch for the Kshatriya forefathers, or from the Brahmin ones, or from this, or for they're in this line or that line. Manu goes into it like that. So so I would think it's there, because then after them it's mentioned the sages, the great sages. So that means all these great personalities on top of, you know, Tapa Jana Loka. In return, the Supreme Lord accepts the three modes of nature so that the Groke's creation is nicely sustained until the night of Brahma falls. Right? In return means they're doing the sacrifice, so the Lord reciprocates with them. Right? Because how is he going to reciprocate if something's not done? You make that approach to the Lord, he reciprocates. So they and this sacrifice, what is this sacrifice? We're dealing with the primary creation, so they're seeing how the Lord enters everything. Right, that's the element. They're seeing that, how the Lord is there in everything. He reciprocates that by, in this, accepting the modes of nature, and that the universal form is permeating into everything. So you have the subtle form, now you have the form where it's actually manifest. Because when it's manifest, it's still Krishna, right? But he's not associated with the modes. He's associated with his internal potency. The internal potency is transforming, and that's actually dealing, right? But at the same time as that external potency needs the support, so therefore he is transformed as Shiva. But at the same time, as he's still as Vishnu, who's dealing with his internal potency, right? Yeah. So that's what's happening, because they're worshiping in this way, then therefore he reciprocates. So it's not that just the material world's made and then we're hanging around here. The material world is here because there is the reciprocation between him and these great personalities. Right? They manage the universe. So how do they manage the universe? They manage because they know who's there. It's just like, let us say, the common workers in a company. Do they necessarily know the boss?
No.
I mean, there's kind of an idea that there is a boss, but, you know, whether they're, you know, how you say, one of these reptilian transformation kind of persons, or whether they're, like that, you know, whether they have 10 heads and fangs, or, you know, like that. They don't know. They just know there's somebody big there, maybe, you know, like that. But people who are the, you know, main middle management, they know who the boss is, and they know that their position is totally based on the boss. Well, the common person may or may not understand that. They just know they have their little cubicle and this and that, and things are never the way they want it.
Yes.
You know, whatever you have, it's never enough. You have the coffee machine, they want an espresso machine. You have that, then why don't they have, you know, the other things? You know, it just goes on and on. Right?
And their boss is the boss of the department, not the company.
Yeah, yeah. So like that. So then they just see these things. But the point is these great personalities, they know that they're only functioning because of their connection with the Lord. They don't see it otherwise. Right? Occasionally they get overwhelmed by their position, as we see Indra and Brahma and that. But the general principle is they know who's the boss. Right? So they're doing that service, the Lord's reciprocating. Right? So that service means it's being done on the platform of appreciating the universal form. Therefore, then that's reciprocated. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
And their sacrifice is Purushashukta? The Purushashukta is describing that sacrifice. Because right? it mentions all. In other words, it's a. How you say? Yeah, it's just relating that history of that original sacrifice. And it says that's again done then by these nine brothers of Narada. You know, there's 10 sons, so he's not involved in it. Because he's not dealing with all these kind of aspects. He's just dealing with pure bhakti. Because the others are involved in the universal management to some degree. One may say, well, what about the four Kumaras? But the four Kumaras, Sanat Kumar, is Cupid. He's Prajumna, so he is Cupid. He's the one that creates the attractive feature and everything. Right? So they're all involved to some degree. But Narada, he's just involved in pure bhakti. That's why he's special and unique amongst the sons. Yes.
So sacrifice means some level of realization that you're not the doer?
Probably you could say is that you would say realization that the results are not for you.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm. Depending upon your realization, you may or may not appreciate that more or less. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In other words, if I start with the results not for me, even if I think I'm the doer, and it's my result, but I'm willing to give it away.
Okay.
So that's a first point. If I start, I'm not the doer, but then who is the doer?
Mm.
Okay, if the Supreme's the doer, but how is the Supreme the doer? Right? You know, it's not that he's doing and I'm just sitting back.
Mm.
You know, it's a reciprocation.
Yeah.
And then the point is, okay, even if I'm not the doer, who's the result for? Because if I'm not the doer, but the results are me, then what's the point? The end of the whole point, the equation, is wrong. So here is, if the end is correct, that means in between, whatever was there, even if it's faulty, it got you to the right position. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, yes.
I've always been interested in this because there's some complexity to it. There's the five factors of action, and there's the supersoul.
He's one of the five.
Right. So the sanction of the supersoul has to be there.
Yes.
So, but actually the supersoul awakens us also to our previous desires and the previous lives. And we're pursuing that.
Because that's how we're relating to him. In other words, he maintains the relationship as it was. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to adjust that and improve it, you can. But the point is we always make the first step. Mm-hmm. See, presenting the situation is not the first step. It's what you do with the situation that defines who you are. You know what I'm saying? Let's say we have a tennis court with all seats around it. Okay? And so then one person is playing tennis on that court. Okay? What do we call him?
A tennis player.
Okay. Another guy is there, and he goes there every time there's a tennis match, and he sells peanuts. What do we call him? He's a vendor, right? Then there's other people that they organize the whole thing and do all the, you know, the arrangements and the ticketing and all those. So who are they? Yeah, you understand? But it's the same situation. So that's the whole point is there's certain situations we like to function in. So Krishna, all he does is then the relationship ends because, you know, the body is temporary. And then he starts, when it starts, the next body comes up. Then he'll present the situations that match the previous mentality, so you can interact with him based on your the previous mood that you had. That's all he's doing. Because everybody is only interacting with Krishna. In illusion, they think they're not. Right? So anything that they find nice or attractive in the world or of meaning or value is all Krishna. But people don't think it's him, therefore they're an illusion. So there's no one, no living entity that's acting outside of their interaction with Krishna. Just it's not on a personal and affectionate level. It's just mechanics.
It may be semantics, but wouldn't it be a better word would be accomplisher, or you know, somebody that thinks they're the cause of the result of the activities? Because doer, I mean, at some level, we're initiating the action.
Yeah, we are initiating the action.
Right. So
by our desire.
So on some level.
But that doesn't mean that we're doing it just because I initiate it. That's just like I push the button on the blender. So I think I'm doing the blending. But I'm not. The blending machine's doing the blending. I have absolutely nothing to do with it other than pushing the button. You understand?
Yeah, but I push the button.
Yeah, so you can push so many buttons. And some buttons you push, you get a punch in the nose. So pushing buttons doesn't necessarily, you know, you push a button and you go up in the lift, you know. But actually, did you push the button? No, your finger pushed the button, but you are not the finger. So what allowed the finger to do it? You had a desire. Right? And the Lord sanctions it. So therefore, then the mind, then through the mode of goodness, then pushes on the air, which pushes on the fire, which pushes on the muscle, which then pushes the button. So all we had was desire. That's actually where it was. So we actually did zip.
Okay.
We did desire.
We did desire, yes. I am the desire. You can make a movie. Desire. Okay. Okay. Yet, even as he supports the gross creation with his all-pervasive impersonal energies, right? Because that's how it's being supported. Mm-hmm. And then that's supported, and that's him. Right, it's directly him, but in his impersonal feature. So it's still Vishnu, right? But it's through the transformations that actually deal with the modes of nature. But he only goes through all that, does that, and expands like that because the devotees want to interact with them like that. Right? The Supreme Lord feels no personal affinity for any of the gunas, not even the mode of goodness. Right? Well, everybody here that's been mentioned, these are all the personalities that are in the top level of mode of goodness. Right? Because Madhu is mentioning that you have goodness, you know, in three parts. You know, so the top will be Brahma, will be the Dharma Shastra, the Nakshatras, like this. Then I think Prajapatis, like that. Then down will that will be, you know, your sages, those who are just means the study of Shastra. These kind of performance of duties and everything nice. Then the next down is the performance of sacrifices and everything for the benefits you'll get from it, you know, and things like that. So you have all these levels. And that's all in the mode of goodness. So here is that, and that means everybody involved here that's been mentioned is all somewhere situated in that mode of goodness. Right? We're not talking now about the demigods that come after. We're talking about these original personality. So they're all situated in that goodness. So they have an affinity for it. But Krishna works with it, but he has no affinity. That's why he's beyond.
Yes.
Okay. Not even the mode of goodness. Footnote 40. This verse summarizes the answer to the question asked by Sri Narad Muni in 252. Yad Adishtanam. What is the background of the universe? Srila Prabhupada explains. The material energy is a potency of the Lord, which is displayed in time, accepting the three qualities of goodness, passion, ignorance, in terms of Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. The material energy thus works under the supreme spell of his lordship, although he is always transcendental to all such material activities. Right, so, material means it's dealing with the Mahatattva. Right? That's the whole thing. It's that's the aspect. You're dealing on this level. So that's the material world. We're dealing with the grossest part of it. You know, and then we're trying to, within that, find a more refined position.
Yes.
The gross dravyas, the dravya that I have, my dravyas are better than your dravyas. Right? You know, like that kind of a thing. You know, so. And therefore my position, you know, everything goes is all from there.
Everything's better.
Yeah, everything's better. But we don't even really get into the subtle, just the subtle body, the linga sharir, let alone the karana sharir and all that. You know, on the primary creation, universal form. So that is just material energy. So the Lord, because that's his platform he functions at, but that's not his interest. His interest is only in the devotion.
No.
Yes.
Can we say that material mahat consists of three modes? That's what differentiates from spiritual?
Yes, you could say like that. But you'd also have to throw in ahankar and time. Because generally those are all placed in there. Plus you have the karana sharir, the jiva in that polluted consciousness. Because in the spiritual world they have jivas but no polluted consciousness. There you have time, but things are controlled by time. It's just adding a flavor. You know what I'm saying? If there's a sense of time, you know, it's just like you wake up in the middle of the night, but you felt it was a long night, right? And you look at the watch and it's 12 o'clock. And so that means you have another few hours to sleep. So does that add or not? Doesn't that? You don't feel better?
Wow, much better.
You don't feel better.
He doesn't wake up.
He just sleeps straight through. Okay, good. What I'm saying is just the concept of time adds a flavor. You know? Or let's say you've been sitting with friends and talking and it really was good and it felt like it was forever, you know, but then you were worried that you were late for some other things you had to do and you look at your watch and you actually still got plenty of time. You understand? So it adds the flavor. Here we're controlled by it. There's the one's not controlled by it. It just adds the flavor because it's eternal time. So it's always there. The present is always is eternal. So therefore, the concept of past and future is only conceptual. Right? It's just it's an effect. It's not actually, you know, it's not actually happening. It just gives that effect like it's happening. Does that make sense? So, and then your modes, there you're dealing with sandini, samvin, vladini. Right? So you know, what's it? Kriya, icha, and jnana. Right? Instead of what's it? Kriya, dravya, and jnana. Does that make sense? So then that comes into the modes. So you have the same thing. It's just that there it's eternal and perfect. While here, then there's the temporary manifestation. The elements of it are eternal. The jivas are eternal. Time's eternal. You know, the material energy is eternal. But its manifestation is temporary. So it's always changing. That's what gives anxiety to the soul, who's eternal. The soul doesn't like that it changes. Means you like variety, that kind of change, but you don't like where it's gone. You know what I'm saying?
What?
Yes.
I'm still not sure I get the difference between polluted consciousness, ahankara, and karanashriya. These three terms, kind of.
Polluted consciousness, ahankara, and karanashriya.
Yes.
Okay. Polluted consciousness, what's the pollution in the consciousness?
Ahankar.
Yes. And so that itself, that consciousness generates the linga and the
karma.
And the stula sharir, right?
Yeah.
So that's why it's called a sharir, a body. You understand?
Yes.
So the polluted consciousness itself is that body. All it is these are three aspects. These are three terms to bring out the various aspects of it. Right? So if I say polluted consciousness, that means the jiva has pure consciousness, which he should be functioning in, but he's not.
Yes.
If I say ahankar, then I'm pointing out that what's wrong with the consciousness. Because I say polluted.
Yes.
Okay, but what's that pollution? The pollution is that false ego.
Yes.
And the karana sharir means, well, why do I have a material body? Because there's the karana sharir. So the Mayavadis, the Buddhists, like this, they'll try to get out of, you know, the liberationists, they get out of the material world by giving up the stula and linga sharir, but they don't give up the karana sharir. Therefore, they're back. You know, so when they come back and they're laid in grass, I'm back. Yeah,
check me out.
Yeah.
Yes.
Don't step.
Yes.
Yeah.
There are stories of some devotees who have
said that. Yes. What can they do?
Yeah.
They're powerless. The Mayavadis are powerless in the face of Bhakti Yoga.
Yes. Thanks.
Okay. The Lord is perfectly so we understand it, in other words, his expansion or his transformation, where he's dealing with material energy, he still remains the same.
Yeah.
And then there's this extension which he deals with. So it's non-different from him, but at the same time different. So he is dealing with the material energy, but at the same time he's not. That's his unique position. He can do that. We can't do that. You know, like that. We push the button, we get the reaction.
We've tried.
Yeah. The Lord is perfectly transcendental at all times, in all places, and all circumstances. It is by the Lord's will that Brahma creates, Lord Shiva destroys, and he himself as Vishnu maintains all. Footnote 41. This is the answer to the question, Yaparas Tvam, under whom are you working? Asked by Narad Muni. Right, so who's the background? It's Lord Vishnu and Brahman, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ultimately that's how he's maintaining, but that Brahman is situated on him.
Yes.
Right? And then here is that under whom are you working? He's working under Vishnu.
Yes.
Right? So Vishnu is the background of everything. Vishnu is who he's working under.
Yes.
Right? Because he's asking, okay, you're here, you're doing these things. I may not have noticed, but then you sit down and do tapasya. And if you're the source of everything, why would he be doing tapasya unless it's just fun? You know, like that. My dear son, Brahma concludes, whatever you inquired from me, I have thus explained unto you. And you must know for certain that whatever there is, either as cause or as effect, both in the material and spiritual worlds, is dependent upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It always goes back to the personality of God. Is that the person who, by his will, then you see, then he expands, and then all this is happening. Right? So by his will, the spiritual world is manifest. By his will, the material world is manifest. But the spiritual world is an eternal manifestation, while the material world is a temporary. Right? Did I say material parts?
No.
Okay. Sometimes you catch the echo. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 33, the complete cosmic situation, both in the material and in the spiritual manifestations of the energies of the Lord, is working and moving first as the cause and then as the effect. So there's always the Lord and then his energies, you know, or the Lord and his expansions, or the Lord and his transformations. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But the original cause is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Effect, so he is even the origin of the cause. Right? So Mahavishnu is the cause, but he's the cause of Mahavishnu. Right? So Mahavishnu, he expands as Vishnu and then transforms as effect, as Shiva. Does that make sense? So Krishna doesn't transform. Right? Even Mahavishnu is not transforming. Right? It's that aspect of Vishnu when he expands into these three element aspects. But he's maintaining himself as he is. So he's as he is. He makes these extensions, but he still remains as he is, and he's in the transformed state. You know, the potency to deal with the mode of ignorance and the potency to deal with the mode of goodness. Well, actually, it's the other way around. This side is Shiva, this side is God.
From you or from me?
The right is Shiva and and the left is
God. So you were right the first time. From you.
Okay. Okay. But the
Mahavishnu, the cause, and he transforms into Shiva.
Yes. He expands, and that expansion transforms. So it's not that he transforms. We're talking about means because it's him, right? Because from Brahma Samhita, when you light a lamp, you know, a clean lamp, and you go all the way down the line, all of them have the same potency. So all the way down to Kiradakshay Vishnu, they're the same. So you can't attribute the elements of the transformation of Shiva, Sada Shiva, from any of them, because they're the same person. It's just that because you're doing different, the point of expanding is to do different things, right? In other words, you wouldn't go into the kitchen, expand yourself into so many forms and cook the same preparation. It would be a problem. Right, you know, so each one cooks a different one, or one washes the pots, one cuts the vegetables, one runs out to the store for the things you forgot, you know, like that. One sits in the, you know, the living room watching the, you know, the shows that you didn't want to miss, you know. So, you know, you do all of it, you know.
Brilliant.
You know, and then when dinner's ready, one of you calls the one sitting in the living room, and then you know does the waiting and every, you know, so you can have a great time, right? You know.
That would be great.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Does that make sense? So you have that all of these aspects can be going on. So there is a uniqueness. That's why there's an expansion, because to taste the flavor of Prajumna, then there's Garbhodaksha Vishnu. To taste the flavor of Aniruddha, there's Kiradaksha Vishnu. But they're all non-different. So technically you can say the aspect of Shiva is from all of them. That's why in certain descriptions, those terms of Shiva are even attributed to Vishnu. What's its name? Hiranyagarbha-shukta. It's about Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Right? But Hiranyagarbha means that aspect of creation and the element of control. Means he wants to taste. Therefore, taste happens. The tongue manifests. So that aspect, Hiranyagarbha. But all the terms that are used are all you could attribute that to Shiva. So what does that mean? Is that he is all three? Because Mahavishnu is all three on the Mahatattva level, right? Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is all three on the universal level, within the egg, within the universe. And Kiradakshaya is all three on the element of dealing with ourselves, because with the individual, there's still the creation, maintenance, and destruction. You understand? So you can attribute all three. But when we're going through these levels of creation, then it's been done there, so then we just look at Shiva expanding down. But what does that mean? That means, how does he expand down at the end? Because he's expanding from Garbhadakshaya. So he's expanded from Mahavishnu. And then you see there's the next expansion. But technically the next expansion is coming from the expansion of Mahavishnu as Vishnu. Does that make sense? It's just a matter of, since you've defined Vishnu, you don't have to necessarily go through all the expansions to show how that one position has expanded. But if you get technical about it, then it's because he's expanded, therefore then, you know. But this is expanded into here because he's expanded, so they're non-different. So you can explain it from any of those perspectives. So if you explain it from Garbhadakshaya, then you know, in other words, you explain from Garbhadakshaya, so then you're going back and just saying about Sada Shiva. You don't necessarily have to mention Mahavishnu, because you know that Garbhadakshaya goes back. He's an expansion. He's presumed to expand from Sankarshan as Mahavishnu. So that's why it seems so complicated, because depending upon the question or the point that's being discussed, it will take it from these various positions. Does that make sense? Yeah?
So Rudra coming from Brahma is already the transformation, so he from his forehead, so he's just expanding from transformed energy.
Yes. Because when you get down to that level, then you're doing Kiradaksha Vishnu. Because Shiva expand means if there's a qualified person as Brahma, then he expands from Brahma. That's how we see. He appears from Brahma, but if there's not, then Brahma is going to be Vishnu anyway. So that's why it says Shiva expands from Vishnu or from Brahma. Mm-hmm. So it depends on the pastime, who's there to get qualified. So if there's a qualified Jiva, then naturally he expands there. It's fine. But if there's not, he expands from the Lord. So... okay. Effects of the original cause become the causes of other effects. Right? So in other words, Krishna is the cause, there's an effect. Now that effect becomes the cause of the next effect.
Yes.
Right? He's the cause, the effect is Balaram. In the Balaram's the cause of the effect of Mahanarayan. Mahanarayan is the cause of the effect of Mahavishnu.
Yes.
You understand? So the original cause of all causes is Krishna.
Yes.
Like that. And why we say effect? Because there's always that element of arranging, making the arrangements for the interaction. That's the effect.
So the cause and effect of the material is simply a continuation of the original.
Yes. But what it is various aspects of bringing out. Because Baal means there's no need to bring out that element of linga in connection with the material energy.
It's not
that Balaram doesn't have that. It's not that Krishna doesn't have that, but it's just not an element at all that he would deal with. But because he has the quality, that's why you can see it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. Yeah? Okay. And thus everything either permanent, right, in the spiritual world, or temporary, is working as cause and effect. And because the Lord is the primeval cause of all persons, that's why then also Sadashiva would be seen as technically non-different than Vishnu, because in that way then he's cause for the effect of further expansion. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. And because the Lord is the primal cause of all persons and all energies, he is the cause of all causes, as confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, as well as in the Bhagavad Gita. So the original primeval cause is vigraha, the personality. And the impersonal spiritual effulgence, Brahma-jyotir, is also an effect of the Supreme Brahman. Brahmanohi pratishtaham, Lord Krishna. So he's the Supreme Brahman. Then there's the Brahma-jyotir. Right? So when we say Brahman, then generally by just by usage, we mean Brahma-jyoti. But technically, means everything is Brahman. So Brahma-jyotir is one aspect of Brahman. But the original is Vigraha, the form. That's the original. So Vigraha Brahman is the original. Expanding from that is Brahma-jyotir. Right? Expanding from that is this material manifestation. Yes.
So when we think that karma on its own has some validity, we can't refer to what is mentioned as the cause and effect coming from the Vigraha.
That's the whole... The point is that the cause and effect means we're taking it that I'm the center. So I'm the cause, I'm the effect. So that's why you have the element, let's say, if something happens to the devotee, on one level you can say it's my karma. But then that'll be useful if we're looking at it as that's my karma, so, you know, and that's the effect of my karma, so my activities weren't good. Because generally we don't think of, wow, why is everything so fabulous? Oh, it's my karma. You know, we generally don't do that, right? You know, like that. You know, you might, but I say,
that's standard.
Maybe a little too American, right? You know, so. So then, got distracted by
karma.
Yes, so then you're going to think, then you will think that I should be careful and not do that because it's my karma, because I've gotten that because Krishna didn't like it. Krishna didn't like it, so therefore there's bad karma. So indirectly, we're looking at it as Krishna karma. But we're looking at the aspect of I did an activity, I got the result. But we're not looking at it from the point of I'm the doer, meaning I'm the controller. Then it's fine to look at it that way. But then other times, to avoid that thought, then it's pointed as Krishna karma. There is no karma. We're not under karma. So it's happening because Krishna's arranged it. It's not happening because I did it, I got the results. Right? The point is that you wanted it, Krishna arranged it. Because you wanted it, therefore it's connected to you. But actually you're still not the doer, so it's still not your result. But because you think it is, then you'll get the external temporary elements of it. But you understand it as Krishna's, and it connected to Krishna and act in that way, then the results are spiritual.
The advantage of this Krishna karma is that the relationship is enhanced.
Yes, yes. But you see is that you always have this aspect of, let me say, this double thing of, so you have that Krishna's aspect, the Krishna and the karma, there's one other one that does like that. Oh, bhakti, that means we're performing devotional service, right? Because it's inspiring. But if there's any attitude, I've done so much, you know, then what do we say? Bhakti starts at prema.
Yes.
Mm. Before that is practice. It's all sadhana. Right? We make a distinction, of course, between sadhana bhakti, meaning before liberation, and bhava sadhana after liberation. But it's all technically all sadhana. Prema is bhakti. Before that, it is not. It is in pursuance of. You're practicing, you're trying to develop. That's only if there's attitude. If there's no attitude, just one is very inspired, then yes, it's bhakti. So even the person who hasn't even committed themselves to Shraddha will say he's doing devotional service. Right? The guy just walks in off the street, what's going on here? You know, there seems to be something happening. They had a few minutes, so they come in, and hey, can you help me with this? And like that. So they're doing bhakti. Because that's what we see. They don't see it like that. So for them, it's just a jñāta sukṛti.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
So the vichar comes in when there's a relationship.
Yes. Means the whole point is if the relationship, if it's based on the positive element, the relationship with Krishna, then we use those more inspiring aspects. Mm-hmm. If it's based on my false ego, then we use the more technical. In other words, if I'm seeing it properly, we focus more on rasa. If we're not seeing it properly, we focus more on tattva.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's the only thing. Because if you can say it and everybody catches it and moves with it, you just go that way. Mm-hmm. But if it doesn't, then you have to be careful. Like the other day, we mentioned some, touched on some things of rasa. It didn't go down well. So then we had to switch over to tattva.
Yes.
Right? You understand? So yes. Then to explain all the background, because then there's always issues and misgivings and, you know, definitions of words and the semantics that go, you know, all these things. So once those are clear, the anartha is clear, then one can deal more with that element. Because once it gets to stable means now we understand the definitions, but then there comes to the point where one appreciates those definitions. One can relate to that, means you have the element of taste. Right? So that's the
so this perspective brings us to that conclusion. Balance is the element, the strong element in devotional service, because you must see where you're going, why you're using this.
Yes, you must have that balance, because if it goes too much one way, it becomes impersonal. It goes the other way, it becomes too sentimental. Right, so then, because you always have the razor's edge of sahajyas on one side, maya bodies on the other.
You know?
Not necessarily a great choice. That's who you're there. Right? So if you ever look over the edge, then, you know, we're here.
We'll catch you.
Yeah, you want to say you do the stage dive?
Yeah. And then suddenly everybody disappears. This attitude we were talking about, this is the final stage of anartha nivritti, that actually, yes, I'm doing devotional service, I'm successful, I'm doing good.
Yes, that's what Haridas Thakur says, that attitude can keep you on the platform of Bhav Sadhana for hundreds of lifetimes. That means the Braj, the Prakat Braj Lila in the material world will come and go 100 times and you'll be there every time.
Yes.
Because you're thinking like that.
Yeah.
You won't move to Golok, because you won't move to Prema, because you think like that. So that's why there's the point where it's not here, it's still there. Because otherwise then one has to get serious. Right? You know, because otherwise you think you're doing fine. You know, those gopis thought they were doing great. You know, but then they kind of understood as no, it's not. They're not. Their position is not great. So, by that absorption, then they were able to cross. And so, either immediately it happened, they went that night, you know, the obstacles were removed, or the obstacles weren't removed, they went the next night, the next rasa dance.
So the key is absorption.
Yes. That's the whole. That's why we say Krishna consciousness. Because
yes.
So Krishna consciousness must be in samadhi.
Yes.
When it's in samadhi, then you can take part in the pastimes. Because before samadhi, you can take part in the situations, but not the pastimes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the whole.
Okay.
Brahmajyoti is also an effect of the Supreme Brahman, just like Sadashiva is an effect. Right, so they're all expansions of Krishna. So Krishna is the... That's why all these are being brought out, because Krishna is the original. That's why all this focus is there. That's what's special about the Bhagavatam, is that you're focusing on the original personality of Godhead. You know, it's not... You know, that therefore distinguishes him from everything else. Right? But everything is seen in connection with him. That's the thing, simultaneously one and different. So, verses 34 to 38, Brahma glorifies devotional service. In verses 34 to 38, Brahma tells Narada of his enthusiasm to take shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. Such heartfelt zeal for bhakti is the real way to associate with him in transcendental bliss, which even the Lord himself is unable to measure. Because it's the point is what is this, what is bliss? of devotional service. Right? It's the Hladini Shakti. Does the Hladini Shakti have a limit?
No.
It's Krishna's energy. It's unlimited. So therefore, Krishna himself can't even limit it. I mean, can't even measure it. Technically, it means we could on Tattva, he could measure anything, but why can't he measure this?
It keeps expanding.
No, but everything keeps expanding. Like Prabhupada says, you know, the question was, can you make make a mountain he can't lift? And Prabhupada said, yes, and then he'll lift it. Mm. So why this he doesn't lift?
Because it always expands.
Yeah. It's different. You have to go to the other side.
Because it's reciprocal?
You're getting close. But so what's that reciprocation? It's reciprocal, but what is starting from the other side? So he reciprocates as Vishai. So what is being performed as Ashram?
Devotional service.
Devotional service. So therefore he's not going to look at it as Tattva.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
He's not going to look at it as Sarvagya, as the Supreme Lord. He's going to look at it as Muddhata, as being overwhelmed by his yoga maya, you know, based on devotion. So he can't, it bewilders him. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But this can be taken further.
No, that's kind of getting the furthest. Okay, go on. Let's see. Some realization here that we're okay. Let's see. Okay.
Because it said that the bliss is not possible to measure, but then nothing is possible to measure in the sense of emotions in the spiritual world.
Yes, but that's what I'm meaning. But the emotions in the spiritual world are all connected with devotion. There is nothing that happens there that's not connected with devotion.
So it's not possible to measure them.
Yes, so that means that because that's all part of the devotional energy, which means the knowledge and energy and knowledge and activities to please Krishna. So when samvit and vladini are combined, that's bhakti. That's the bhakti shakti. What we're saying, why we're saying this is because then sandini is the facts of the existence of everything. That you can look at and consider. So that is, even though Krishna is unlimited, technically he could measure it, but at the same time, as whatever he measures, it's always going beyond that at every moment. But there's a consideration there. But on this other side, when it's the control by bhakti, that is not going to be. You know what I'm saying? As a shakti, yes, from the sambandhi gyan, you could. But the point is bliss is generated from activity, and that activity, actual bliss can only be generated by bhakti, right? By an activity that's meant to please Krishna. That's the only thing that can generate bliss. What we're experiencing here in this world is not bliss. We're looking for bliss because that's our nature. So anything that's not annoying, we call bliss. Is that?
And even that is rare.
Yes. Yeah, otherwise it gets boring.
So when it said that the Supreme Lord knows everything, it's only in the
Supreme Lord
knows everything.
Knows everything. Okay.
So it's only in the position of Tattva. Mm.
Means he knows everything in connection with Rasa. We're talking about measuring the limits. It's not that he doesn't know bhakti, otherwise how does he interact with it? How do you reciprocate it? Don't confuse the two. See, you're taking the position that we just discussed about bhakti and then putting it onto the side of Tattva and then explaining it from there. The point is he has the mood of either he's all-knowing, Sarvajna, or he puts himself under the control of his yoga maya and then just experiences the exchanges with the devotees. Mm. Right? It means him expanding everywhere as super soul. It's because of his living entities are relating to him as the Supreme Lord. Therefore, he's expanding in that way. It's not necessarily based on devotion. It means the material manifestation is not based on devotion. It's not here because of devotion. It's here for the potential of devotion. Because what you're trying to do is change the living entities. Absorption in Krishna, but through illusion, into absorption in Krishna, not through illusion, and then absorption in Krishna through bhakti. Mm-hmm. you're trying to transform that. But it has to be Krishna all the way through. Otherwise, how does it work? That means you would be doing things in the material to do bhakti. You'd have to do it in a different environment. Right? Does that make sense? How do I churn, butter out of milk?
Make it into yogurt first.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, but in any case, how can I get butter? So that's the technique. But why can I get butter from milk?
Because
it's already there. So in other words, I can get bhakti from my ordinary dealings in the material world because it's already there between the Lord and His energies, His internal potency. But because we're not dealing in that way, therefore there's the transformation. Right? There's the Shakti Parinamavad, the transformation. So we're dealing with now an inferior form of His energy that does not have the understanding that this is connected to the Lord. And so we can deal, but the mechanics are the same, because it have to be the same, otherwise how does it transfer from Mahamaya to Yogamaya? Right? I drive the car, for myself, and then I meet the devotees, now I drive the devotees, to Harinam. Does it change? Did my car change? Yes, did the technique change?
It becomes an old car now. When you drive for the devotees, it became an old car.
Yeah. That's right. Yes. Okay. Practical point. No, that's realization. You're talking about what are the further realizations Mataji's bringing up. So here's the realization. Now that you're driving for Krishna, now it's an old car, right? Does that make sense? So it has to already be there. In other words, the whole creation is all about Krishna and consciousness of Him. But it's you don't see that it's consciousness. You don't know that what you're conscious of is Him. That's called Maya. That which is not. Does that make sense? So all it is changing the consciousness. So, therefore, as Sarvagya, he knows everything. Vaikuntha, where it's all in majesty, and the material world, where it's, on a good day, maybe there's some variety of supreme. Right? But otherwise, it's basically just a bunch of, ladies singing, but that's about as far as you get.
I just don't get the grip of how it works when he puts himself in the position that he enjoys the relationship. In that sense, he doesn't know what is the outcome. Some example, maybe.
What's the point?
Because one cannot enjoy relationship if he knows how it will be. Is it?
Okay. You get a nice present for a kid, it's something that they're always talking about, and then, so what do you expect will happen when they open the present?
I'll be happy they will.
Okay, so you know the future.
Yes, but maybe.
So is it a problem?
No, it's not a problem. But not the details, maybe.
That's fair. But how many details can there be?
Unlimited.
Means how many pieces of tape, cellotape, is there on that piece of paper? So I mean unlimited meaning they could have grabbed here and ripped it, or grabbed, 1 millimeter over and ripped it and grabbed it, or a little bit this way and ripped it, or they ripped it just in front of the sellotape so it went around the sellotape, or they grabbed the sellotape so the sellotape added on the other side of the rip. What do you mean by unlimited?
Because
you're talking rasa here.
How they will react
to unlimited.
Yeah, what will be the response? There will be plenty of details.
Plenty. How much is plenty?
Unlimited.
That's theoretical. Unlimited, yes, means all the children in the world, the reactions, and it's unlimited.
Yeah.
But we're talking about your child.
Okay. That's very predictable.
Yeah. So therefore, what's the problem? You know what I'm saying? So it's not a problem. At the same time, is then there's the element of more commitment, surrender into that. Therefore, he's mudata, where he doesn't know. You understand? In other words, he can taste rasa as sarvagya. It's just it has another flavor, more intimate as mudata. Does that make sense?
So that's the aspect.
Yes. In other words, Vaikuntha is always in sarvagya. Right? When it's majesty, it's always sarvagya. It's spontaneous devotional service. That's mudata. So that's why it's spontaneous devotional service catches his attention. But spontaneous devotional service even more. Does that make sense?
This is very clear.
Okay, that's it. Okay. Let me do it. Okay. Okay. In verse 34 to 38, Brahma tells Narada of his enthusiasm to take shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. Such heartfelt zeal for bhakti is the real way to associate with him in transcendental bliss, which even the Lord himself is unable to measure. Brahma, knowing well that he has achieved the status of the foremost of sages only by the mercy of the Supreme. Right, because just because you're pious doesn't mean you'll end up as Brahma. Who makes you Brahma? Krishna, right? So it's just because you doesn't mean that it's still by his grace. Yeah. It's not that, yeah, I'm so qualified, therefore I'm Brahma, but still, who arranged it?
Yeah.
Right? Like that. Now admits that through brain power alone, Lord Krishna cannot be understood. Like he's explained all these things logically using all these, you know, examples and everything like that. But actually, he can't be understood through brain power. It means brain power alone. It means you use your brain. but you understand why these terms are there. We'll just say that through brain power. It means no brain power, so I don't have to use it. So brain power alone. Right? You know, or exclusive monism, or you have to catch the, you know, the what do you call it? Yeah, but they define the you know what's going on here. The only thing to be done, Brahma concludes, is to surrender at his lotus feet and offer him respectful obeisances. Brahma goes on to glorify the Lord as he is in his own nature beyond the material manifestation. Okay, so as he is means his nature, that he's beyond. He's beyond. That he takes all these other expansions and transformations to deal with material energy. But the real glory is he himself. You know, he's the
yes.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Because I, Brahma, have caught hold of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Hari with great zeal, all I say has been proven true. Nor is the progress of my mind ever deterred, because it's all connected to the Lord, so why would there be a problem? Yeah. So in other words, if we have problems, it's either the pastimes of the Lord, or, you know, we're doing something wrong.
Yes.
Or both. Okay. Nor are my senses ever degraded by temporary attachment to matter. In his purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada explains that truth can be ascertained only in connection with the Lord.
Okay. Can I ask a question? So then, we were talking about rasa in tattva, and most people come for the experience to Krishna consciousness. But then,
that's why, because that's the ananda aspect of the living entity.
Yes. Because this is in Prayojana, this is the Ananda.
Yeah.
But then people don't get this experience. Is it because of...
Well, because that experience is gained through an activity. Unless you do an action, how will you get the experience?
So it's a wrong action without knowledge, or is it...
Either the action's not being done properly, or the action may be technically properly, but the attitude's wrong. Because attitude is part of action. Right? Because when the verb defines the attitude, Right? So circumstance is the attitude. Right? Time, place, and circumstance. So if the attitude's wrong, it won't work. So because Prajumna has to be connected properly with Aniruddha, because Aniruddha extends from Prajumna. So there actually has to be a match. So if there's no attitude, how will the need manifest? If the need doesn't manifest, then the endeavor won't actually... How where are you taking it? Where are you going? Why do you even care if you get a result? Right? So that's so you have that. But you'll find that much of the time, I mean, you get the element of, okay, during the kirtan or, you know, during the artik or during the class, if you're getting a taste or not, that's one thing. You know, you're chanting, whether you're focused on it or not,
yeah.
Right? But generally that's not, I mean, that will be, of course, that's the prominent element on one level, but you could say, because it's direct, but the aspect of associating with devotees, that's actually the cause of all these others going nicely. So then if the association with devotees isn't proper, in other words, if you're using a corporate model for Vaishnava association.
Corporate model means
it's all about being efficient and being successful and all the nice bureaucracy and meetings and everything.
Okay.
You know, all the fancy lingo. Unless everything's like perfect meeting, you know, there was actually no one there to oppose and you could talk all your talk and everybody bought it. Then you know, you'll consider that this is going great. But otherwise, once you leave that room, how do you talk? Do you offer obeisances when you see somebody senior? Are you so busy that you're going here and there? So you never really have time because, you know, it's understood I'm doing more important things. You know, or how do you eat? What do you eat? Where do you eat? What's the conversation during eating? You know, how do you dress? You know, then how do you, and you know, and then because how you dress, so much conversation is wasted on how somebody dresses. Or how you want to dress and how everybody else should leave you alone. You understand? So where is this? So didati pratigrihnati guhyamakati prichati bhukte bojayate. So on eating, there is no culture. I mean, zero. You know? And that's a good day.
Yes.
Zero is good.
Zero is neutral.
Zero is neutral. Right? You know, so better than bad. You know, like that. You know, like you go in and sit in one of your plastic chairs and it collapses. Now that's bad. That's in the negative.
Yes.
So you went in, sat in your plastic chair. That's zero. They say, "What you're eating? Why you're eating? Why the diet you're eating?" So no. There's no consideration of actual Vaishnava interaction. Giving gifts and charity in that, but then so as long as it's not too much of a gift, otherwise the IRS is out after you.
Yeah.
You know, what do you call it? That's what you call it. That, you know, means the revenue service, you just replace the I with ISKCON, right? Right? Okay. And then you're going to have you know, so then there's the whole whose control, whose money actually is it? It belongs to the temple. It came from the city, as if the temple owns the city. They own everyone in the city. They're not people. They're just, you know, they're just a demographic in the, you know what I'm saying? They're not, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then you have guhya makiti prichati. Don't bother with that because it'll be on Facebook with it, you know, however quick it takes to type. You know, and if you're not, if you have a private conversation, and that, then it's not transparent. You're not truthful. You're not honest to everybody because everybody needs to know, as if they do. You know, so why don't I put on there? You know, what I passed stool this morning. You know, what it was like. You know, does everyone want to hear? You know, like that. You know, if it's a baby, of course they want to hear. But if it's not a baby, then nobody wants to hear. Right? You know, so the whole thing, what does that mean, transparency? It just means that what I want to know about, they should talk about. And if I don't want to know about it, it's too much information. So it's lose-lose. There is no culture there. So now we went through the three things that Rupa Goswami says is the basis of culture, of Vaishnava interaction. If there's zero there on a good day, then what are we talking about? Where's the taste? So unless you're really absorbed in pure devotion and chanting the holy name and that's all you do, you know, then where are you going to get a taste? So all it is if we follow what Rupa Goswami gives as pure devotion, both in the effort, the culture, the philosophy, then you'll get a taste. So that's why the individual, it's his effort in self-realization that's going to have the maximum effect. Right? Your commitment to self-realization is what's going to make it work. And then your effort to associate with those who will inspire you to do that. That's why he says, associate with those more advanced, like-minded and more advanced. Then you'll be inspired. But it all comes back to, you know, who pushed the button. You know, so we're the one that wants to see the spiritual life go, then we'll make it happen, despite everybody else. That's the beauty of it. That's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's last, one of the points of his last instructions. Don't worry if everybody else is not functioning nicely in Krishna consciousness. Don't worry about it. You can do it, and you can go back to Godhead. We're not, in that way, we're independent from everybody else. We're not independent from Guru and Krishna, but we're independent of the social structure. Therefore, the social structure is there to support. If it's giving support, great. If it's not, then we can still function. That's what we mean, is the butter is in milk already. Right? Now you can churn it directly from the milk, you can make it into yogurt and churn it, you know, or you can just skim the cream off and then from there, you know, then cook it. You can do so many ways, our techniques, so whatever is available. But the point is the butter is already in the milk. So bhakti already is self-sufficient, is already perfect. So one individual can practice it and get the full benefit. Or it can be practiced as a group. And so the standard is as a group. Right? Because that's what they do in the spiritual world. But if that's not available, then you, whoever you can associate with. And it works. That's the beauty. That's why it's perfect. And that's why the material is always imperfect. Because even if it's perfectly arranged, something goes wrong. You know, everything was there, you know, got everything like that, and it's all perfect, got it all arranged for the program, and then the electricity's not on. Or somebody left the window open and there's millions of mosquitoes. Or, you know, somebody forgot the matches.
Yeah. We have both. AC but no electricity, and nets but mosquitoes inside.
Yes. Now that takes management. You know? Like that. Who can think of that? That, you know, what's going to annoy you the most, they arranged it. You know, you can sit there in your chair looking at your AC that doesn't work while being bitten by mosquitoes.
And that's for the whole night.
Yeah, perfection. Yeah. Every last thing is you keep this piece of, you know, you take a bunch of cloth and put it, water it up, you know, like a cheddar and fold it up, and then hold it and you go to sleep. As soon as you it's amazing how you can do it and still kind of stay asleep. It's like in, well, in the Orient you see it, that people can be basically dozing and still fan, using hand fan. It's like that. It's just practice.
Yeah. Maharaj, practice.
Oh, that's what you could do. Get yourself, you know, either a treadmill or you know, those exercise bicycles.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, nowadays if you have stuff like that, people are thinking this is good. And just rework the electronics that you generate electricity and that will make your AC. You get on there and run. So as long as you're running, you get the AC and you feel better. So that way the family will be very fit. Right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. or get you know, those little wheels and get about, you know, 100 squirrels or something. Yeah.
You're talking about this different log exchange and Prasad being one of them, and the conversation that goes with it. It's very common to have debates after Prasad's really.
After, that's less bad. During, it's because when the debate starts, you don't want to eat. So if they start it while you're eating, and then the worst part is because they're making their point, you can't break eye contact, so you can't eat. You know, and then if you break and then eat, then they think you didn't hear what they said or didn't value it. So you have to make a reply. This is all situations of unculture, lack of culture, lack of training. But otherwise, it's Prabhupada mentions these things. One could learn. So that's the point. It's taste. That's why there is the social aspect of the Vedic, because if that's situated in goodness, the mind is peaceful and satisfied. Therefore, then you just do a little bit in that area, it creates happiness. But if you situate the culture and passion and ignorance, then unless you get a result, you know, I'll consider it was a great lunch because, you know, the guy agreed to the contract and our terms. You know, so you don't just go and have lunch, you have a power lunch or whatever it is that you have, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. And therefore, that's why doctors do so well these days, have more patients, because no one eats properly. Because if you don't eat properly, you don't digest. If you don't digest, your health is bad.
So we try to get taste from social position?
Yes, the social position, facilities, you know, any whatever it is that is deemed at the time that the modes of nature say is what you want. You know, it's like before, let's say, you know, you go back into the 1800s. The standard dress was that of basically suit and tie. Even a common worker might be dressed like that, unless it's really grungy, like let's say he's doing blacksmith or something like that. But as soon as he's not doing that, he puts on his suit and tie. You know? So you have these well-dressed people. But they're walking around on streets that are dirt.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, but their culture, their language, and you know, how they eat, how they do everything, you know. Yeah. You know, so it's refined on one level. Yeah. Sophisticated. Yeah. But the street is mud. You know, so if it doesn't rain, it works good. If it does rain, then you wear your boots.
Yeah.
All right? Nowadays, you have, you know, no one's about to go out in mud. That's why you see broken bricks on all the roads in Mayapur, because they'd rather walk on broken bricks than on dirt.
Yes.
Right? So therefore, right? So then the problem comes is that now we have these nice cement or asphalt, really, really nice, but what are people wearing? They look like, you know, they look like bums off the street, you know. Before, people would consider them uncultured, you know. So it's just the modes make all the, you're thinking, no, this is where it's at. No, all it is it keeps changing. Then there'll be a time where it's dirt streets and they look like a slob. And there'll be times when they look like a gentleman and it's proper streets. So the modes are always, you know, adjusting. So it's never stable. So what people value now that makes them happy, that's defined by the modes. So that mode of passion and ignorance, then that's just what's happening in the contemporary environment. And after a few years, it changes. You know what I'm saying? It's like before. It's like before, underwear didn't stick out. It just didn't. You just didn't know it. You tried to make it as invisible as possible. Right?
It's under.
Yeah, it's underwear. But now it's not, it was underwear, right? Now it's not underwear, it's innerwear. And now, I was just looking at something the other day, the guy's got on a shirt, right? A regular old button-up shirt. You know, untucked, of course, you know. But he's got a t-shirt on top of that. Yeah. Yeah, so then you can see that, you know, the collar sticking out and you can see the tails and that sticking out. You know, and even if it's a little longer, so you know, then part of the sleeve sticks out, you know. Yeah. You know, it's just goes. You know, underwear has huge names on it, so you can see what underwear. You know, who cares that he's got Dolce & Gabbana on? It's like, who cares? You know, so that you can see it. You know, or you make different. You know, you wear a white shirt and some kind of loud color as a T-shirt, or it partly sticks out. Or, you know, the girls, you know, wear some. Means it's either two sizes too small or two sizes too big, right? So too big, then you put it off your shoulders so everything sticks out, right? You know, so. I guess the point is everything sticks out, right?
That's the general principle we're working with.
Yeah, whether it's... Yeah. Does that make sense? So that's modes of nature. So what was considered uncultured before, now is considered that's fashionable. Mm. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, you know? So it's just changing. Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that the mode of goodness, that's stable. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, someone from a lifestyle of goodness, no matter what culture they're from, would be able to relate to someone else in the mode of goodness, whatever culture they're from. They'd appreciate. You know what I'm saying? Let's say someone from Europe, you know, very sophisticated, everything very clean and orderly, walks into someone from the Orient, and everything is clean and orderly and very aesthetic, they would appreciate it. You know, in fact, they would probably catch something and buy a few and take it back, you know, and vice versa. You know what I'm saying? So they can relate. So that's the whole thing, is the mode of goodness is the stable platform to function from. The mode of passion and ignorance, it's got so much for a change, because it's about just getting immediate results, and about doing what's not you're not supposed to do. Because what it means, in other words, what is the liberal target? What you're not supposed to do. It's easy. Doing what you're supposed to do, that's hard. But the people who do it, they're still in the positions of authority and money. But the liberals, it's always, no, break that down, and then we'll get everything. Right? It's just like this. The guys are making money. They've been making it for hundreds of years. Now we take their money, give it to the people. Now the people have money. For how long?
A week.
Yeah, and then they have nothing. And then no one's generating it because, you know, you send them off to some stalag somewhere. You know, like that. And you know, so there's nothing. You know, so four, what is it, you know, was it four or something like 4 million... farmers later, then there's nothing to eat. You know, plenty of rocks or trees being cut down, but no food. Yeah. You know, so then that's the difficulty. It's unless you follow the mode of goodness, you won't have anything stable. So you can see is how important people want stability. That's the concept of commitment. Is that they're stable. They're committed to the job, or they're committed to the family, or committed to the community, or committed to the cause, because there's stability. So that only comes with a mode of goodness. So unless you use a mode of goodness, there is no stability. Like that. And then if there's no stability, how will there be taste? So there's an idea that there's taste in the modern world. Mm. But how often is that, you know, it's a moment. You know, they're getting out there and something happens, yeah! Like that. And how long does he do that all day? How long does that take? Yeah. 2.5 seconds. Okay? 2.5 seconds. Right? If he does it again, then it's getting old. Right? You know, we already did that for 2.5 seconds. Hey, you know. You understand? So then where does it go? You know, once jumping off the bridge into the canal, you know? How many times are you gonna do that? Oh, he's so crazy. He does stuff like that. How many times did he jump off into the canal? How many times did he run out into the pond? You know, I mean, the fountain. How many times?
One.
Once? Maybe they did it again twice. You know, how many years later?
Reunion.
Yeah, like that. You know what I'm saying? How many times do you sit on the front of the boat, you know, while you're going out there, leaning on it while it's going out? You know, how many times do you do that? You get sunburned. You just don't do that. You understand? That's why the cheap ones don't have tops. The expensive ones have tops. Right? because it's about not getting sunburned, right? You know. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that they talk about it, but it's moments. The mode of goodness creates an environment in which then it's always can be progressive. So anything done adds to a mood of satisfaction. See, adding happiness to satisfaction is a gain. Right? But adding happiness to nothing, it's only a moment. Right? Because there's nothing substantial. That's the whole point. Brahman is the basis. So if you connect everything back to the Lord, see it in connection with the Lord, it's stable. Then there's the effect of rasa. Right? So that's the whole thing. Is goodness is only practiced because then you get accustomed to pure goodness. Because if you don't like goodness, pure goodness, you're also probably not going to like on a regular basis. Maybe, okay, a good kirtan, great, but you know, other times you won't like it. There's not enough happening. So that's why it's recommended. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Okay, Srila Prabhupada then explains. Okay. The truth can be ascertained only in connection to the Lord. Anyone, therefore, who is earnestly serious in heart and soul about being in intimate touch with the personality of Godhead, in the relationship of transcendental loving service, will always be infallible in words and action. So Prabhupada points out a lot of things. Earnestly serious, right? Yeah. So he's really trying to make to his best, you know, sincerely making his effort to be serious and to have the right attitude. Mm-hmm. Right? Then, how you say, you know, and that full commitment. Then intimate touch, not just, okay, God's there. It's enough that, yeah, it's for Krishna. But it's intimate touch, means it's in connection with Him, with the personality of Godhead, not just the Brahman aspect. That's why we say, we just start with the Brahman because we're dealing with matter. So better than dealing with matter is dealing with Brahman. Because that matter is based on Brahman, but the Brahman is based on Krishna. So that's why it's indirect. Chanting, it's Krishna. Right? The universal form is indirect because you're going through Brahman then Krishna. Right? Will always be infallible in words and action, right? Because everything's connected to the Lord. Because fallible means it's mundane. Infallible means it's connected to Krishna. The reason is that the Supreme Lord is absolute truth. And anything earnestly dovetailed with the absolute truth attains the same transcendental quality. Earnestly, not just, you know, just doing it. You know, oh, it's for Krishna. Yeah, it means, of course, because it's connected to Krishna, you always get a benefit. That's the nice thing. Devotional service, even done not so nicely, you get a benefit. Right? But if it's done with that earnest endeavor, that will be actually the point. Then you get the maximum benefit. Because then you're talking relationship. Because otherwise it's just mechanics. Because any relationship, if it's mechanical, people don't appreciate. Right? It means it's better mechanical than nothing. But the point is, it's better interactive than mechanical.
Is it better offensive than nothing?
That's a detail of, you know, male-female relationships. You know what I'm saying? But the normal thing is if you're talking devotional service, then you want to avoid offense.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you're chanting and then you're not such in a meditative mood and
no, that's another thing. That's offensive chanting, but that's a stage of sadhana. That's nama bas, right? So it's a stage of sadhana.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know. But offensive means where you're actually, you know, directly trying to annoy them. Is not that.
Okay.
It has its effect here and there, but it's, you know. It's a, you know, as practical, you may use it in work by instigating the person, you know, that he can do better, and that's all he's done. Mm. Does that make sense? On the other hand, any amount of mental speculation on the strength of material science and knowledge without any bona fide touch with the absolute truth is sure to be a mundane untruth and failure, simply due to not being in touch with the absolute truth. Because if we're looking for truth, you have to connect it to the absolute truth. Otherwise, it's not truth.
Yes.
Right? Looking at science without connecting to the Lord, it's not actually science. It's only partial truths, you know. Right. So here's without any bona fide. So it means you could work on the strength of material science in the beginning, connect it to the Lord. Right? Then it has an effect. But eventually it would be, it's based on the Lord. Such godless, unfaithful words and actions, however materially enriched, are never to be trusted. That is the purport of this important verse. A grain of devotion is more valuable than tons of faithlessness. That's what you can put on a sticker. Right?
Yes.
A grain of devotion is more valuable than tons of faithlessness.
Yes.
This is confirmed by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary to the same verse. Quote, you say that the spiritual world is eternal, beyond the three gunas, in such verses as Amritam Kshemam Abhayam Tri Murdhayi Murdhasu, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.16.9. You have also said that the one quarter portion, the material world of the three gunas, is not false, although it is temporary, being the effect of the external energy, Maya. In such verses as Vilaj Jana Naya, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.5.13. You imply that the objects of the material world are real since they are used in sadhana. But others learned in scripture say that this whole universe is illusory, since it is the play of the mind, and the existence of the Lord is temporary because it has only secondary qualities of existence. What to speak of his abode of three portions? Should I believe your words or theirs? End quote. So that's the doubt.
Yes.
Do you have a doubt on the doubt, or
no, you want
to support the doubt, or okay? The words I have spoken to you are not false. The reason is that the Lord, the cause of everything, is held in my zealous mind. Where there is the Lord, there is truth. Believe my words. Others learned in scriptures do not hold the Lord in their minds. Thus the workings of their minds is false, and their words are false. Do not accept the opinions of such liars. Right? So notice that he starts very pleasantly. And having accepted the fact, then he calls them liars. Yeah. So here do we get now look at the one element, the logic here. Now, if we're looking at it that we're saying that it's all temporary, and so therefore it's not real, it's just the mind, right? So if we take that, then their interpretation we would have to take in the same position. If the mind is illusory, then their perspective of it has to be illusion. So therefore they, by their own philosophy, they cannot have any actual stand of absolute, so they cannot understand anything.
Yes.
So they are in no position to say what's absolute, since what they're working with is not absolute.
Yes.
And we're saying the Lord is absolute, so what's in touch with the Lord is absolute. Therefore, what we're saying is truth. Because it's real. So real means in touch with the Lord. Unreal means not in touch with the Lord. Then it's a detail whether it actually is existing there or not.
Yes.
But that's the bottom line. That's the point to get across. So we're trying to get these things as foundations here. Right. In other words, there's a sandwich happening here, right? So your second canto and the 11th canto, where all these technical things are done, then in between is everything else, right? So these technical points are caught that if it's not in connection with Krishna, it's useless. It's that simple, right? We start off with saying if it's not in connection with Krishna, it's false. You know. So therefore, you know, we want to deal in reality. So it's in connection with Krishna's reality. What's not connected to Krishna is unreal.
Maharaj, so when scientists or even philosophers like Michel Foucault says there's no ultimate truth, actually they're correct in their perspective because they're only touching material existence. So for them, there'll be no chance.
There is no absolute truth because absolute means a connection with the absolute. Yes, so you could say it is true from that. But at the same time, just logically, how can they so absolutely say there's no absolute truth? You know, it's that point given the other day, Reedine Undermar says, there is no absolute truth. You can't say there's no absolute truth. And he says, yeah, okay. You know, you're going about doing exactly the opposite of what you're saying. You know, so from his own philosophy, then, you know, it's like that, you know, the one saying, you know, don't trust authority, you know. You know, trust in me that you can't trust in authority. Yes, right? You know.
Sir.
Hmm?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So that's the whole point. But true is there is no absolute truth because they're not connected to the absolute truth. So what they're dealing with, they may be playing with facts, but what's the truth of those facts? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That they can't know. So if truth is just facts, but what's the intent of it? So do we mean facts or do we mean it's more than facts? So people say, of course, it has to be more than facts because we're people. But then the point is then what's the intent of that? You know, and then ultimately is that what's the intent back to Krishna? You know? Although I am known as the great Brahma, perfect in the disciplic succession of Vedic wisdom, and although I have undergone all austerities and am an expert in mystic powers and self-realization, and although I am recognized as such by the great forefathers of the living entities who offer me respectful obeisances, still I cannot understand him, the Lord, the very source of my birth. Right? So he knows who he is. You know, this is not false ego. He's stating the fact that I know all this, but still, even though I know all this, which others don't know, I still don't know the Lord, right? Because the Lord is beyond, so it's only by His grace that you get this. It's not by intellectual, right? We use the intelligence, like the Brahma made an endeavor, but it's through making the endeavor, the Lord being pleased, He reciprocates by revealing Himself.
Okay, so true humility is not putting yourself down, but recognizing the position.
No, but in putting yourself down, that means you thought you were something in the beginning. But if we're nothing in the beginning, then it's just a matter of, you know, what is this? Is this rock hard? Yeah. But isn't that proud? Or is that so hard? Hard rock. Right? So, I mean, what's his position? Why can he be proud? Has it opened a cafe? No. Therefore, it's just a rock. Right? So, what does that mean? You know, I'm really not actually that hard. I'm really not really that much of a rock. You know what I'm saying? What is this whole thing? That's just a mode of ignorance. But it's popular. That's taken as humility. Humility is that is your position with others in the Lord. Because if I'm not a rock, then none of the others are rocks either. Oh, I'm not a devotee, I'm not this and that, and that actually neither is anybody else. You know, only my spiritual man. Now he's a devotee. You understand? It comes along with it's part of the package. Or because I'm not anything, so I can't commit, so therefore I don't have the commitment. Also, the guru is there, but maybe not. You understand? So it's a useless position. You know, I mean, you could say it's a fraction better than pride because you're a little open to possible solutions. You know, when you're proud, you're not looking for solutions to your pride. You know, you're trying to cultivate it.
But sometimes we also see that you start to identify with this self. Loathing kind of.
Yeah, so therefore it's an identity. And that's because you're self-loathing, therefore you're useless, therefore you can't pick a choice that will be useful.
Mm, yes.
You know, so and therefore if you can't pick a choice that'll be useful, then that means your endeavors won't get a result. And if the endeavor doesn't get a result, what do you have to offer to Krishna? So that's why this self-loathing element is useless. Popular in the corporate world, because if you loathe yourself, then you won't mind when they, you know, give you the boot. You know, so it is popular, but not because it's real, not because it's actual humility. Actual humility is you know who you are. Hanuman, he knows, okay, once he's been reminded, he knows he can lift mountains. So humility is, he will engage that to please the Lord. Not that, oh, I can lift mountains and all that. No, please pick this. No, I can't. You know, how much time you waste? You know, stuff like that. You know, you're going to pick it up or not? Well, it's like, it's a game. You understand? So it's just this so-called modern liberal game.
You get attention.
Yeah, but it's all. But it's still. It's about yourself. If you're really humble, then why are you the victim? You know what I'm saying? The person makes themselves out to be the victim, and then they're supposed to be humble, center of attention. It's just how in an inverse way, you know. Yes. You know, it's like a black hole. It just sucks everything in. You know. Like that. So it's not actual humility. You know, so, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, when Moses gets, you know, sees the Lord and gets realized, what happens to his hair? Right? You know, he's got a pompadour that even Elvis would be jealous of. You know? Before that, it was just kind of draggly, but then after that, you know, and then your eyes, you always got that, you know, look of, you know, how you say, you know, like that. So then, but is that real? Is that how they look? Is that how Narad Muni looks? Is that how Lord Brahma looks? You know?
Huh?
Hopefully not.
Hopefully
not.
Only in the Bollywood movie.
Yeah. Okay, that's another one. It's the same Monday, more of the same Monday. You know, because they got it from Hollywood. Right?
Yeah.
So then, how does that make sense? So that's the point. It's not real because they don't know. It's a mundane projection.
Yeah.
So there's a projection of what's humble and what's this and what's that. How you should respond. You know? He's not humble. I gave him the opportunity. He didn't take it. And what was that? That was not humility. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing is, but because I said it like that, because the focus is on the other person, it's all about, yeah, he's not humble. What about, you know, us discussing it that we're proud? Does that make sense? So it's humility is, what's the actual identity? We're servant of Krishna, we're the soul. Therefore, what's the soul supposed to be doing? What's the recommendation? Therefore, this whole thing of the universal, because that's what's actually going on. So just bring yourself in line with that. You know, he said the modern thing of, you know, being harmonious and harmonizing. Yeah, that's what you do. You harmonize with the universal form. That's the whole thing.
Not with your false ego.
Yeah, not with your false ego. Okay, that's text 35. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on this verse as follows. Those learned in the conclusions of all the Vedas think that they know the form of the Supreme Lord. Do they understand other things by their reasoning? I, as described in the previous verse, holding the Lord in my zealous heart, so hum, am filled with the Vedas. Samam naya maya. The Vedas came out of my mouths at the beginning. Others ask the meaning of these Vedas even today. I am the first to perform austerity. While Brahma was contemplating how to carry out the creation of the universe, he heard close by in the water a word of two syllables, tapa, composed of the 16th and 21st sounds of the alphabet, which is known as the wealth of the devotees with no material desire, tapa. Means is that so you know that what the letters are, but they also mean things, because each thing has a word, like ka means Brahma. You know, all these different, so each syllable has, on the tantric level, each syllable has all these meanings. Two, nine, six. I performed austerity first, ordered by the Lord, having gained knowledge of the Lord. I receive powers from the Lord, right? So he did his austerity, pleased the Lord by that, he received knowledge of the Lord by that, then he received powers of the Lord. Right? So in other words, if you want ability, then you want to know the Lord. Where does the ability come from? Right? It doesn't come through, it means we see it in the material manifestation, but unless you're connected to the Lord, how will you get it? So somebody connects to the Lord indirectly by following the activity that is going to bring about a good result. And doing that for some time, then they start getting that result regularly. So then they have the karma for it. But can they maintain it? So if they don't see it connection to the Lord, it will be lost with time. Right? But if you connect it to the Lord, who's the source of that, right, then it's his power that you're understanding that's making it.
Yes.
Not because it's this system or that system. Then you get the benefit. That's the that you can get immediately. That's how a devotee who doesn't have actually the karma to do something is able to do that or greater. But if they go back on their own, nothing happens. You know what I'm saying? That's this. Okay, so that means the more you understand about the Lord to please them and apply that to please the Lord, then the more one can do. I am worshipped by the Prajapatis. Do not say that I do not have powers of yoga. With concentration in mind, I practice skillful yoga, but I did not know the Lord because he is my creator. Oh, then how can those created by me, though they think they know something, know him? Those who say that the existence of the Lord is secondary are blind. Right? So here, those learned in the conclusions of all the Vedas think they know the form of the Supreme Lord. But his point is he doesn't know it, and he spoke the Vedas. And now these are people wrangling with the Vedas, and now they say they know the Lord, when he, who is heard directly from the Lord, meditate, got his powers from the Lord, still doesn't know the Lord. So therefore, only through parampara, by the grace of the Lord, one can know the Lord. Like this. So to say, his existence is secondary. No, Brahman is primary, his form is secondary. That's what they're trying to do. No, the form is primary. The Brahman, that's dependent upon the form. So vigraha is the original. Yes.
Can it also refer to the karma mimamsis who want an object and they see the Lord as the...
Yes, but then what is their supreme? What's the supreme?
It's just the karma, the result.
No, but still, no, but they do have God as there. And, but he is only functioning according to the work we do, but he actually gets it done.
Hmm.
But it still is that impersonal aspect is the primary for them.
Oh.
And he is a person that you worship, and him as Satyanarayan or something, is secondary.
Hmm.
Right, so you hear amongst the Satyanarayan puja,
mm.
That's this worship of the Lord as the manifestation of the mode of goodness. So it's actually an impersonal worship.
Mm.
Right. But it's Vishnu worship, so that means we do Vishnu worship, they'll come and see ours and take part and take prasad and all that. So that's the advantage, is that they're open to being involved in the real Vishnu worship.
Mm.
But on its own, they're not technically not devotees at all, they're impersonal. All the systems are impersonal. Because they deal with the Lord, they all acknowledge the Lord's existence. And there may be no problem that he's a person, but that's not what they're worried about. Their interact is not based on being a person. The individual, you know, even the world religion, you want to go to heaven. What's the point? Is it about because God's a person, you want to go to heaven and you want to see God as a person? He may be a person, that's his own business. What do we care? You know, the main point is that, you know, he gives the stamp that we can go to heaven. You know?
Yeah.
You know, that, so like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we see God kind of on the bureaucratic level, so therefore we function on that level.
Yeah.
Srila Prabhupada adds, Lord Brahma is the first living being who directly learned the Vedic wisdom from the Lord. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kaveye, Srimad Bhagavatam 111. Therefore, who can be a more learned Vedantist than Lord Brahma? He admits that in spite of his perfect knowledge in the Vedas, he was unable to know the glories of the Lord, right? So here is the point. He knows all the Vedas. You're not going to get anyone know them more than him. They came out of his mouth, right? Since no one can be more than Lord Brahma, how can so-called Vedantist be perfectly cognizant of the absolute truth? Right? Even he's not. We can be conscious. So our perfection is that we're conscious of Krishna. But we can't know everything about Krishna. It's not possible. Right? We're limited, but we try to say Krishna's limited and we're unlimited. Now that's illusion. Right? How do you get that the living entity is unlimited, but the Lord is limited? Okay. It has to be illusion. The so-called Vedantist, therefore, cannot enter into the existence of the Lord without being trained in the matter of Bhakti Vedanta, or Vedanta plus Bhakti. Vedanta means self-realization, and Bhakti means realization of the personality of Godhead. And Bhakti means realization of the personality of Godhead to some extent. No one can know the personality of Godhead in full, but at least to a certain extent one can know the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, by self-surrender and a devotional attitude. Right? So there was the devotional attitude was heart, and by self-surrender and soul. Remember it was mentioning about the point of heart and soul? Anyone, therefore, who is earnestly serious in heart and soul. So heart is that what we just said here. So a devotional attitude. And then soul means by self-surrender. Right? And by nothing else. That's the only way it'll happen. It won't happen by anything else. The others are just you're engaging your nature. You can do something big, do something big. That's what Prabhupada said. You don't build the temple here and, you know, have a big program. It says that what's the use of being Westerners? You always talk about big. It all has to be big, so then do something big. Yeah. You know, sitting under the trees is for the locals. So. Okay. Okay. Yeah. In the Brahma... Oh, it's time to say. Okay. So then we'll...
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
Jai
Jai Govardhana ki Jai.